Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. Some of the many services we offer include nursing and social work services. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services. Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Ann Hirsch.
Very interesting discussion.
Absolutely. We're Assemblymember Charles Levine, and that's representing District 13. And we spent the first half just talking about the background, because that's the part I like the most about people. Because, honestly, you just kind of see where they came from and what they did. And they were involved in something as a teenager or in college. And people go to college and go to law school and don't participate in anything. The person who gets involved shows there's a caring. And then what I'd like to talk about just briefly, because Chuck wound up there in the Legal Aid Society, just a brief definition of what the Legal Aid Society is to people and how they benefit from it. Excuse me.
So our law, American law, requires that everyone charged with a crime who faces a jail sentence is entitled to legal representation. The mission of the Legal Aid Society of the City of New York and the Legal Aid Society or public defender organizations of almost every municipality is to provide that essential legal service to those who cannot afford to hire their own attorneys. And of course, it's up to judges to make the determination whether someone is capable of hiring their own attorney or not. So I went to work for the Legal Aid Society in 1972. And in those days, there was controversy with respect to how do the public defender agencies or institutions provide legal services. Initially, my experience was that legal aid lawyers or public defenders would be in each courtroom, and whichever cases came into the court on that particular day were handled by the public defenders. Of course, the problem was that the public defenders or the legal aid lawyers in those early days had no sense of what was the background of a case, didn't know what had happened previously, didn't know whether a case was coming on for a hearing or a trial. I suppose the only advantage the legal aid attorneys had was that the prosecutors had scarcely more information than the defenders did, and the judges knew even less than anybody else. But it was not a system designed to ensure that justice would be done. So the Legal Aid Society this is probably about 73 or 74, of the City of New York developed a program which was called the Continuity Program. I happened to have been one of the first lawyers selected to be in that program. Now, our mission then became to handle a case from the very beginning until the very end, so there was a continuity of legal representation. It is difficult enough to ensure justice in general, but without one attorney being assigned to each defendant from the beginning of a case to the end of a case, it becomes all the more difficult. And eventually prosecutors as well adopted this particular system. But that system was called the continuity unit in those early days. It is now the way that legal services for the indigent are effectively delivered, and this is from a mechanical point of view, throughout the United States. I am very proud to have served as a legal aid attorney for nearly 5 years, and I have great admiration for lawyers who do serve as public defenders.
Great. Now we're going to go to Albany, but before we go to Albany, I'm going to make a comment about that for anybody listening. You were one of those attorneys at
Yes.
Legal Aid, which indicates that you're not getting bad lawyers. It's not lawyers go there because they have nothing else to do. It's lawyers who care, and it's quality lawyers, and you're getting quality advice or guidance if you're using somebody from Legal Aid.
John, I'm glad you mentioned that. So my experience was consistent entirely with what you have just described.
Okay.
The institutions, the legal aid societies, the public defender institutions manage very carefully to make sure that their lawyers are good lawyers. I was also privileged to serve on the Criminal Justice Act, the CJA panels for the federal courts in Manhattan and Brooklyn, the Eastern and the Southern districts. And if a lawyer didn't pass muster, they were off those panels.
Wow, okay.
Immediately. The greatest danger I found was people would be charged with crimes. Now, this can happen civilly or criminally. And they'll end up with a lawyer who has no idea how to handle a case. And it's very difficult for judges to remove those lawyers from these cases. So I suppose you can't have justice without some injustice. But the federal defenders organizations, the lawyers on the Criminal Justice Act panel in the federal courts, and the lawyers who work for public defenders in the state courts are some of the best lawyers I have ever met in my life. And I would have great faith in their capacity and ability to represent their clients above and beyond the call of duty.
Good, good. That's important to know. Now I'm going to turn it over to Ann because she wants to know.
Sure.
Albany.
Well, I understand that you are very much involved with ethics. You are a committee chairperson in that area. And if you could just briefly explain to us how a bill goes through.
Certainly. Certainly. Well, initially, let me state this. I am now chairman of the Elections Law Committee and became the chairman of the Elections Law Committee earlier in the year. But for about 5 years, I was the chairman of the Ethics and Guidance Committee. Now, the Ethics and Guidance Committee in the State Assembly deals solely with matters of sexual harassment. Legislators who retaliate against staff members who make claims of sexual harassment and also discrimination. So it was a very fascinating 5 years worth of experience. And my colleagues, to my dismay, managed to have kept me and the members of my committee very, very busy over the course of that period of time. But I do believe that a strong message has been sent in Albany that sexual harassment is not going to be tolerated on any level. I was very fortunate to be the chair of this committee. It's the only committee that is completely bipartisan. There are 4 Democrats and 4 Republicans. Every other committee is heavily weighted in favor of whichever party controls the House that committee is in. And I was also very fortunate in the midst of a real crisis involving Vito Lopez, who was the very powerful Brooklyn Democratic chair back in 2013, who was guilty of sexual harassment. So I was thrown into this committee at that point, and in all honesty and candor, I'm not so sure I even knew that there was at that point a committee on ethics and guidance. But we managed to function, and we functioned because we were able to find an extraordinary professor of law at the City University of New York, whose name is Merrick T. Rosane, Rick Rosane. He's actually a Long Islander, grew up on Long Island, and he helped us draft a modern policy on sexual harassment and retaliation, which is probably the model policy for legislatures in the United States. That was then adopted by the then Speaker, and that is the policy under which we operate today. So the committee that the task force that helped draft that policy was also bipartisan. So I was the chair of that task force, and there is much to be said for bipartisan consensus in our legislatures, and I think we'd all benefit everywhere if we saw a bit more of that these days in Washington and in other places as well.
Can I ask you a question just? And
sure.
You can write it. That policy on sexual harassment, that's something that people can see?
Of course.
Okay.
It's online.
Okay, that's
it's
what
on
I meant,
the assembly like, website, and if anyone has a difficult time finding it, I'm happy to be able to provide a copy.
Okay,
it's something, by the way, that requires constant work. these policies have to be modified, changed, and made modern almost on a daily basis, because human nature is such that we never know what somebody's going to do. We
right.
never know, as we are seeing today, to our great misfortune amongst some of our political leaders.
Human nature and technology, as it changes, all of a sudden there's a device that nobody knew existed, and that can be offensive,
precisely.
Depending on how it's used.
Precisely.
Right.
We can never anticipate all sort of human conduct, and if we could, we'd be in a better position to be able to protect our people right. from the dangers of that conduct, but that's not the way it is.
Now, you said they could contact you. Am I correct? You have a district office, an Albany office.
Yes.
Do you have something on Minetto in Plainview? That I saw your name yesterday where Dr. Bewell used to be.
Well, Ann, I hope you saw my name in large letters at that building. But that's a campaign headquarters for the upcoming election in November. So, and I hope, was my name in like 20-foot letters?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Because I was looking, saying, what happened to Dr. Bewell?
There's thousands of people in front of it applauding, right?
Well, millions, apparently. Millions.
Okay. But there are numerous ways of contacting you.
Of course.
Including if you just go on the computer
yes.
and write your name, it will come up with your email and all your information.
Just one slight note of caution. My last name is Lavine, but it happens to be spelled L-A, not L-E, L-A-V-I-N-E.
I wondered how that got to be, right.
So my grandfather and his two brothers came here from somewhere in northern Russia, and one of them went to California, and his name is Lavine, L-E-V-I, was Lavine, L-E-V-I-N-E. My grandfather and another brother went to the upper Midwest, where everything is spelled phonetically. So they became Lavine, L-A-V-I-N-E. Yes.
That one actually makes more sense. But
it
when
does.
I first met you and I saw L-A, I thought it was a miss, you know, a misspelling. And I was like, but that's common sense, but I've never seen it before that.
And I wasn't sure if you were Lavine because L-A-V-I-N-E, and I couldn't...
But Lavine is so much more refined.
Actually, do you have a general number?
Sure.
That you
can,
somebody listening has a question.
Our district office is 516-676-0050.
Okay.
And there's always someone there.
Chuck did mention that he's running for election, re-election, which is 100% fine because you're an incumbent. And that's a number somebody could call if they wanted to participate, help out, volunteer, or do something. No?
Well, no. No.
No.
I think we
Sorry.
Have some other numbers for that. But I'm not sure I know what those numbers are.
That's okay.
Because I don't call.
Right. You don't
I don't call,
okay,
the volunteer. I've already volunteered.
That's
Maybe
fine.
We can find out a number.
If we get that number, in the next minute, I have no problem giving that one out.
Thank you, Chuck.
But that's my goof. That number that we gave out is a governmental office number.
No,
that if
not,
you have a question.
Not to worry. So that's anything having to do with government. So a number for the campaign is 516-996-0122.
Okay, that's two separate things.
And John, I also want to recognize the contributions that you make to the betterment of life in the town of North Hempstead, and you as well, and here in Nassau County, New
Thank
York
you.
As well.
It's a pleasure. We're out of time.
Your pleasure's been
That's
mine.
That's a half
Thanks.
Hour. It's unbelievable. I thank you so much for coming on the show. This
my
is
great
wonderful.
Pleasure. Thank
we
you.
We all wish you wonderful luck in November. And you've been listening to Senior Talk Radio on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.